And we finally get to talk about one of my favorite Bible characters, Melchizedek. Big old Melchizedek. I call him Mel for short. Mel and me are tight, you know? Yeah, Melchizedek. I talked to you about him earlier when I started introducing the book of Hebrews. Now we're getting into the thick of it in Hebrews chapter 7. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zunder. Used to be, I thought that all you had to do was mention Melchizedek and you are spiritual. I remember I wrote this newsletter back in 1986 when I started writing about God. Might have been 85. And I had a newsletter called Food for Thought. It was extremely boring. It was spiritual. There was some good meat there, I have to say. Well, actually, you know, Food for Thought, you know, not very creative title, not very snappy, but it worked at the time. I had 11 subscribers, and then the next year I had 11 subscribers, and the next year I had 11 subscribers. You know why? Because I tried to sound smart instead of just pouring out my heart, studying, freewheeling, putting my own take on things, putting my life into it, my personality, my very being. I kind of separated myself from the reader, and I was very wise and intelligent. It's like I was writing from my ivory tower. And I remember mentioning Melchizedek, and as soon as you mentioned him, you had the awe and respect of all your readers. So that was full of crap right there. Now, it's no longer something, this guy that I, you know, find I have cachet if I mention Melchizedek. It's just that this guy is interesting, and I just love the practicality of it. I didn't realize how practical it was and what God was doing when he introduced this character and why it's important to our Lord Jesus Christ in the thousand years and why it's important to the Hebrews to whom Paul is writing here in Hebrews chapter 7. So let's start reading about this mysterious character named Melchizedek. What mother would name her son Melchizedek? That's what I want to know. And what was his last name? Smith? Melchizedek Smith. Maybe Jones. Melchizedek Jones. I can just see that on his mailbox. No, you're right. I think some Amish people are named Melchizedek. Is it that? Yeah, it's Melchizedek. I tend to say Melchizedek. Maybe his first name was Dick, or maybe that's his. Maybe Melchizedek's his last name. You think it's his last name? That could be. His first name could be Dick, right? Dick Melchizedek. I don't know. Maybe he's one of these people where it just is. He goes by one name. You know, he's that epic, like you know, Cher or Madonna. They only need one name. All you need is say Madonna. Like, what's Madonna's last name? What do you mean, what's Madonna's last name? She's so epic, she doesn't need one. Who's a man who only has one name? 50 Cent? No, that's two. 50 and Cent. That doesn't work. I don't know. I'll think of one. Write me and let me know some epic men that have one name. But here's one of them. I think he's the lead of all of them, Melchizedek. King of Salem, priest of God Most High, who meets with Abraham returning from the combat with the kings. Chedorlaomer was the king that Abraham slaughtered in the Valley of the Kings. And he's coming back and he meets this guy. Now, this is the interesting part here. One of the interesting things is this Melchizedek was the king of Salem, priest of God. He was a king and a priest. He combined the offices of king and priest. Now, that's the ideal thing. But the thing is, Aaron couldn't handle that because, you know, Aaron was just one guy. He was a priest, and he was from Levi. You need to know this about the priesthood. There are 12 tribes in Israel, and the priesthood only came from the tribe of Levi, one of the 12 tribes. And then there was an order of priesthood, the Aaronic order, and Aaron was the representative there, and he passed the baton to other priests. And but the thing is, there was a separate king. Like there were kings of Israel, and there were high priests. So the king and priest were not combined into one office. It was too much work, I guess, for these weaklings. All they could do was to handle the priesthood, slaughter all that meat, stab it with the fork. That's hard work. And now you got to sit on a throne too and make the laws. Are you kidding me? We'll give that to another guy. But Jesus Christ is both king and priest in the millennium, and that's a big deal. And it's God's purpose that the nation Israel be a kingdom of priests. And in fact, if you go to 1 Peter 2:8, a royal priesthood. You're a royal priesthood. Royal has to do with kingship, with wearing those purple robes of royalty. So it's a combination. And in the perfect place in the thousand years, that's the way it's going to be. because Israel's going to do this under their new chief priest. They're going to rule the nations for God and bring the nation's offerings to God. So when they bring the nation's offerings to God, they act as priests. When they rule the nations for God, they're acting as kings. So it would behoove their head then to be both priest and king. But again, you didn't see that in Israel's history. But we have this wonderful throwback. Sorry, Melchizedek, to refer to you as a throwback. But it's a throwback because God has a precedent here. This man who was king and priest of Salem, which was the name of Jerusalem before it became Jerusalem. And there's some theories out there that Jerusalem went from Salem, peace, to Jerusalem, a city of peace, at the time of Abraham. So Melchizedek blesses Abraham, and Abraham gives a tithe to him. Apparently, this man was so important that when you pass through his territory, you better give him a present of some kind, because this guy was the king of righteousness. Well, yeah, it is what his name means. In Hebrew, the two elements are king just, king dash just. So he was king of justness, that is king of righteousness. He's also king of Salem, which is king of peace. So righteousness and peace, all these things that are going to earmark, they're going to characterize the 1,000-year kingdom. I'm going to tell you why that's all this. I know, who cares? I'm going to tell you why this is important. Why don't I just do this now? Because you need to know this. Because no king comes except out of Levi, except out of the tribe of Levi and the order of Aaron. You can't be a priest in Israel. Did I say priest? Did I say king? I meant priest. You cannot be a priest. The Lord is out of Judah, so he couldn't technically be a priest unless the priesthood changes. So who the heck is going to say, well, we're going to change the priesthood in midstream? We're all of a sudden going to say that, okay, you can be a priest if you're out of Judah. So this would really, in the minds of the Israelites receiving this letter of Hebrews, they can't imagine how this Jesus Christ Paul is preaching could be their high priest. How can he be? He can't be. He's out of Judah. No priest arises out of Judah. He's got to be out of Levi. But then Paul says, but remember, there was another king and priest who is actually greater than Abraham, and that he blessed Abraham while Levi was still in the loins of Abraham. Do you get that? I'm going to get all into this, into Hebrews chapter 7. But see, Levi was not yet born because Abraham was his grandfather. No, it was his great-grandfather, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jacob was the father of the 12 sons. So his great-grandfather, Abraham. So Levi was still in the loins of Abraham when he met Melchizedek. And Melchizedek at that time was greater than Abraham. How do I know this? All right, we'll skip ahead to Hebrews 7:7, now beyond all contradiction, the inferior is blessed by the better. And Melchizedek blessed and tithed Abram. So beyond all contradiction, I dare you to contradict this. I dare you to contradict this. The inferior is blessed by the better. So Abraham's blessed by Melchizedek. Melchizedek is the better. He's the better. In verse 6, he who is not of their genealogy, i.e. Melchizedek, has tithed Abraham and has blessed him who has the promises. He has blessed and tithed Abraham. And the inferior is blessed by the superior. Therefore, the evidence here is that this Melchizedek, who was before Abraham, is actually greater than Abraham. So we're going to revert to him in order to make room for Jesus Christ, because he's a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Who'd ever heard of that? It's always the order of Aaron, the order of Aaron, the order of Aaron, who is of Levi. Got to be the order of Aaron. Ah, there's a new order. There's going to be a transfer of the priesthood that's commensurate with a transfer of the law. In other words, new covenant, new priesthood. This was radical information to these Hebrews. And you have to have some kind of evidence. Like, where are you pulling this out of, Paul? Or whoever, they didn't know it was Paul. Where's this writer pulling this out of? Then he brings up this Melchizedek dude. Oh, yeah, we remember legends about this king priest that was in Jerusalem before Abraham Abraham or Moses or any of our people even got there. And he wasn't of the Israel descent because he preceded Israel. He met Israel's grandfather, and Israel's grandfather shook and trembled before Melchizedek. So Melchizedek was greater. So now we're reverting to him and saying that Jesus Christ is a priest of the order of Melchizedek. And he had to jog their memory because this guy was way back in their hoary history, you see. So why does God do it this way? Well, I don't know for sure, okay? But there's evidence that he did it before. There's a precedent in Galatians 3. Paul says, and I know I told you this before, but for new listeners, we're going to say it again. It doesn't hurt to repeat it. Galatians 3:15, brethren, I'm saying this as a human covenant. Likewise, having been ratified, no one is repudiating or modifying it. Now to Abraham, the promises were declared, and to his seed. Now, the point here being at verse 17, this I'm saying, a covenant having been ratified before by God, the law having come 430 years afterward, does not invalidate so as to nullify the promise. For if the enjoyment of the allotment is of law, it's no longer of promise. Yet God has graciously granted it to Abraham through the promise. Okay, the whole point here, Paul's big deal is faith, right? Faith. We're justified by faith, not by works of law. Israel would have freaked out at that. How can you say not by works of law? It's only by law. There's no precedent. Paul says, oh yes, there is. God made a covenant 430 years before the law. He ratified it with Abraham, and it has to do with faith. God promised Abraham, remember I told you yesterday, put Abraham to sleep, swore by himself, and he did it, and it speaks of faith. And there's a precedent, and the law that comes 430 years afterward does not invalidate that promise God made to Abraham. So again, we're reverting to something previously God did that everybody forgot about and say, no, the law doesn't supersede that. The law came subsequent to it. So what's the greater, the law or the promise God made to Abraham by faith? The promise God made to Abraham by faith, that came first. Likewise, Melchizedek comes first before Levi was even invented. The promise by faith came first before we'd even heard of Mosaic law. And the fact that there was a king and a priest before there was even such thing as a guy named Levi proves that this is something greater. God's reverting to it. And Jesus Christ is a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, not the order of Aaron. People need to know this. The Israelites needed to know it. The Hebrews needed to know it, because otherwise Paul was on shaky ground. He was pulling this out of his, but not now. He has scriptural precedent. This has been Martin Zender. More on Melchizedek tomorrow.